Welcome to Sarah Talk. I'm Sarah Austin.
And I'm Mandy Imus.
On today's show, we're going to have comedian Melanie Vesey join us. Very, very funny woman. She is a gay comedian who recently got married. And so we're going to find out a little bit about her story. And
she does a great way of expressing sometimes things that we're not all able to express.
There's an importance to being able to kind of step away from some deep, heavy topics and kind of laugh, and that's very therapeutic. And
that's what I do all the time. If something comes up and there's, you know, a funeral or something happens, I try to ease it off with
a little humor.
With humor. You know, my best friend's mom was in a car accident and passed away quite a few years ago now. And they had a remembrance of her life. And I remember when I went there, it was very uncomfortable because those things are never something that you are at ease going
right.
to. You know, it was a bunch of people I didn't know and her family, but I wanted to support her and I wanted to be there. So the whole time I was just making little underhanded jokes under my breath to her to make her laugh, because that's how I deal when things are heavy, and I just kind of make these jokes. And she came back a few days then, but now even still to this day, she's like, that's the best thing that you could have ever have done to me, because in the midst of losing my sanity, there was this little ray of sunshine that came in and broke up this depth of sadness.
Absolutely.
And I don't know, it's how I deal. And so I think that in the recent Paris attacks, it's fresh to have a new opinion and something to make us laugh and something to make us continue on in this life that is not always rainbows and butterflies.
Yep. So that's kind of the heavy thing we wanted to talk a little bit about, was the Paris attacks. And obviously our heart goes out to, you know, anyone who's been affected by that kind of violence. And for me, the thing that fires me up most about this, and Facebook has taken a lot of crap for their flag overlay graphic. We stand with Paris, yes,
absolutely.
But we stand with humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point that's being made and the thing that most people missed was the day before Paris, there was a similar thing in Beirut.
Oh, and there was a similar thing in Kenya.
In Kenya, yeah. And so
with Al-Shabaab.
You know, what makes Paris different from these other places, and should it, and why? Is it that because people in those places, this happens all once a week, there's some sort of terrorism or sectarian violence of some sort, and so it's just normal, and so we stop looking at it, which is wrong, and we shouldn't.
Right.
And so Paris is, it's been decades since there's been any...
Well, I mean, they had the one with the media guy, I can't remember his name right now, but...
But it's not something that happens there all the time,
right.
So... You know, when it does, then it's a big deal. And so, you know, shame on us, I think, for having that kind of reaction where we'll all stand for Paris, but the other things barely make the news.
No, absolutely.
It's a shame.
It's absolutely true. I watch the news a lot, and so I see the things happening, but they're definitely not covered, you know, 24/7 as this was. I mean, maybe it's because Paris is one of our strongest allies.
Right. Well, and then I think, too, back to my small town upbringing, I think, and this is a very generalized statement, but Americans on the average are not world travelers.
No.
We don't get out of our own country for most of us. And when we do, it's Mexico or Canada, or we go on a cruise, which is not the same as backpacking across Europe for a summer. Or
right.
So our knowledge of world geography is really shit.
Limited.
And we know about France because... You know, we know about recent wars and their involvement and ally again, but most of us don't even know, even looking back at Desert Storm and S.H.I.E.L.D., and I would wager that most Americans still don't even really understand that geographical makeup
right.
of the Middle East, even though it's such a huge thing in our news and our daily lives.
And we all learned
even.
About it in like the seventh grade.
Yep.
You had to fill out those map puzzles.
Yeah. But, you know, for one reason or another, why is that not important enough to stick? Or why is it not something that we care about as Americans? Are we that selfish that really we only worry about what's going on? It's that first world problems again. Is it
right.
really we only worry about what's going on here?
Do you think it could possibly be that this was an ISIS attack and we understand where that had come from because we ourselves had a similar attack? I mean, ours was definitely more massive than that was, but we know that they're coming and we're fighting the same group.
True.
Like in Kenya,
but the attack in Beirut It was ISIS.
Was it? Yep. Yeah. The one in Kenya wasn't ISIS. It was, you know, Al-Shabaab.
Right.
But we got to also watch out for those groups, those little groups that are becoming bigger. And they killed 146 people there in Kenya,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they were Christian. And they went into a university and all the Christian people were shot and killed. It's scary. It's a scary world we live in. I mean.
Well, and you know, we talk about allies. One of the scarier things is you think this very sectarian and kind of small groups that keep to themselves and do their own thing. Imagine if they started talking to each other, the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. And
right.
if they were to get organized together and leverage that, how much more damage they could be doing. It's kind of scary.
And what are they planning in the future? I think it's that fear of the unknown.
Sure.
That we don't know. You know, they kept saying about how there was a lack of chatter before these attacks, and there's still no chatter now.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's no chatter, what's going on?
Right.
Was this a practice for something bigger? It's scary.
And, you know, I think as we kind of move into the break here, the thing I would take away from this, and again, shame on us for, you know, not covering equally, but if you look at France and the way the people have kind of dealt with this, at some point, and I think Paris has done this quicker than a lot, but at some point you have to go, you know what? You're not going to scare us.
Yeah.
You're not going to terrorize us because the terrorists win. And so, no, we're not going to be afraid to go back to work tomorrow. We're not going
right.
to. Now, there were many who were afraid, yes, but kind of the outcry from the city and the nation was, no, you're not going to get
yeah.
us like that.
And President Hollande, excuse me if I'm butchering that name, he was amazing. And I just want, like, I feel he led his country to feel that way. He didn't back away. At the soccer stadium, they did take him out when the bombs went off. But he went right to that nightclub, and he was not hiding. He was out with his country and with his people, and he brought in his military, and he goes, this stops right now.
Yep.
So something that could have turned into maybe something bigger got stopped because he didn't have that fear, and he stood up, and he was like, he took control of the situation
mm-hmm.
and stopped it. And I very much admire him for that
yeah.
because that was a big deal.
And remembering the panic when the planes started hitting the towers
yeah.
and kind of, you know, how we as a nation, that's not something we see
no.
like a Beirut does or a Kenya where it's an everyday kind of occurrence, the way we reacted to that. Like, I think that's, hopefully that's still fresh in our minds.
I don't think it can ever not be.
Right?
I mean,
we say that, but then you look back, you know, 100 years at things that happened in our nation
that's
and
true.
We've forgotten.
You know, and kids that are growing up now weren't born
right.
when that happened, and so for them it's just something in the history books
mm-hmm.
that, you know, they'll spend one or two pages on, but for us who lived through it and can vividly remember what happened, I think that that's partly why we stand with Paris so much, is because we remember what that felt like.
So, you know, like we said, we kind of you and I both kind of handle that stress with humor. So
mm-hmm.
we're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to have comedian Melanie Vesey join us and deal with a little of that humor. So stick around. We'll be right back. You're listening to Sarah Talk.
I was feeling so alone.
I was going through a really difficult time.
I was embarrassed and a little scared.
I didn't want to bother anyone.
I didn't think they'd understand.
I thought it would just make things worse.
It was tough at first, but I did it.
It ended up taking a huge weight off my shoulders.
I feel a lot better.
I'm glad I asked for help.
I asked for help.
I asked for help.
I asked my aunt.
I asked my dad.
I asked my teacher.
I asked my mom.
I asked the Trevor Project.
Now, I feel like I can get through this.
I know that I am brave.
You can do this.
You can do this.
Ask for help.
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 Whatever it is, ask for help.
If you're thinking about suicide or need support, call the Trevor Lifeline at 1-866-488-7386. Trained counselors are there to help 24/7. Ask for help.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk. I'm Sarah Austin.
And I'm Mandy Imus. Today, as we talked a little bit earlier, we talked about the attacks on Paris that happened over this past weekend. To me, it's not disrespecting it, but I try to find the humor and the light in things that bring us down and that are sad and depressing.
Because a lot of times, if you stay on the depressive side,
right.
it's just it's recipe for downward spiral, and it's hard to get out of when you get down too far into it.
So we have Melanie Vesey joining us today, who is a comic out in LA. How did you first get started in your comedy?
Well, I'm a trained actress. I went to Stella Adler Conservatory. I'm also a dancer. I went to Juilliard. And so wow. I've been in the arts my entire life. And I was speaking at an engagement, and this gentleman walked up to me and he was like, "You know, you're really funny." And I was like, "Yeah, no shit. Like, people have been telling me that my entire life." And he was like, "You should do comedy." And I was like, "Well, here's the thing. I'm a little bit of a prima donna. Like, I've made movies. I've been on TV. Like, I don't want to, like, go to an open mic. Like, I wasn't willing to, like, be a worker among workers in that right. kind of situation. Like, I just wanted to be like, I just want to be shot out of a cannon. I'm a star." And so he was like, "Well, here's the thing. Why don't you come and just take, like, a couple classes with me?" And he wasn't being, like, swarmy or anything like that. He wasn't being like, you know, "Take my class." He wasn't being weird. He was like, "Why don't you just take my class a little bit?" And he seemed really genuine. "And then I'll give you time at the Comedy Store." And I was just like, I'm in. Like, you just said the magic fucking word. You know what I mean? So I took a couple classes with him, and his name is Adam Barnhart. And he's kind of like my comedy guru and just a really, really super solid guy. Super funny. He's kind of like the Pied Piper of comedy. He's helped so many people, you know, get their sea legs with their comedy, their point of view. And then he's got this room at the Comedy Store, which he's had for like almost 20 years. So he's had this night at the Comedy Store. It's on Sunday nights. It's 8 o'clock. And so he just, you know, not only does he put up great comics, but he also helps people, you know, find their way with comedy. So I started his show and I performed and I killed on the first night. Like, I just killed. But here's the thing. This is what I've learned. Everybody kills on the first night because everybody's so happy for them. Like, nobody wants to sit there and be like, "Oh my God, that sucks." So people just like laugh out of pain. Maybe, I don't know. So I killed on the first night. And then I was like, "Wow, I think this is really something for me," because I did so much training that I as an actor, you're a hired gun. They're all like, "Say these words, you know, these are the right. words that we've yeah. written for you." And I've always been, you know, a free spirit. I've always been a big personality. I've always felt like I had more to say. And so I was like, "Wow, maybe this is really like a venue for me to, you know, express myself and have my own thoughts and feelings and be able to just completely be myself." So I started doing the Comedy Store, and then he made me a regular, and I did it pretty regularly for about 3 years. I was there every night. And then I got pregnant with my son, and comedy is a total nighttime jam.
Right.
And, so I couldn't be like out until 2 o'clock in the morning and then, you know, with a baby, like it just doesn't work. Like it's just like doesn't work. So I took a little break for a bit and did some writing and directing. And then I recently, you know, I got married and I have a lot more support in my life right now. And I was like, I got to get back to comedy. So Adam has asked me back, and now I'm the booker and producer of the Sunday night show. It's called Candy at the Comedy Store, and we have a show every Sunday night. And then I have a show tonight, so I'm super wonderful. Excited. So that's the long story of how I got into comedy.
And you're also, you do a very LGBT positive comedy route also.
Well, you know, I'm gay, and I feel like, you know, not talking about it would be weird.
Right.
And of course I'm not going to be negative about it. Like, being gay sucks. You know, even though, I mean, I do talk about how, you know, the challenges and stuff like that, but
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I'm, you know, and here's the thing too, which is that now I'm the producer of this show. So I'm all like, let's get some diversity in here. Like, let's, you know, so, you know, I pick the people who come in. I'm like, black, white, gay, straight. Like, I want it all. Like, I want to see it all. Cause comedy in general, like even at the Comedy Store, it's pretty much like a white dude's situation. Right. You know what I mean? And there's really, you know, there's of course some people that have killed it, you know, that are, you know, diverse. But in general, when you're at the Comedy Store, it's a pretty serious, like just one note kind of lineup, right. you know, with a couple right. of things peppered in there. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, not a lot of women. not a lot of minorities. Right. And so that's why I'm like, with my own show, I'm all like, great, I get to do whatever the fuck I want. And
that's
so
awesome.
And I'm super into it. So.
And you just got married, which is, how long have you been married now?
We've been married a year and change. We got married last July. So
that's
2014,
awesome.
July 13th. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Because that's not something that everyone could do up until recently.
Right.
So that's a fantastic.
No, I mean, actually, we got married. Oh, it was kind of hilarious because we got engaged and it was still not legal. And I'm not young. I'm 43 years old. My wife, however, is, you know, 25. That's the way I roll. And
good for you.
And so, you know, we both have like very different ideas about marriage, and I have like way more hangups about it than she does.
Right.
And you know, we did have some challenges with our family. Like, it was just because it's like, yay, everyone can do it. It doesn't mean that there are family members who are like, you know what, the law tells me it's okay, and yeah, I'm going to be okay about it.
Mm-hmm.
It. That wasn't necessarily our experience.
Right.
So it wasn't legal. And then the day we got our domestic partnership papers in the mail, because, you know, we were like, that's the most married we're going to be able to get, you know, mm-hmm. So we filled out all the paperwork. The papers came in the mail, and then that day they came in the mail was the day that it became legal.
Oh, wow.
And so it was kind of, I know. I feel like you're welcome. You're welcome. All because of us. So I really felt like, first of all, I just felt very symbolic. I mean, I'm so in love with my wife. I couldn't be more happy that all of those other relationships completely failed before,
right,
that I didn't marry any of those people and I married the right person. But then it became very confusing because we wanted to have a wedding, but we were kind of technically married because mm-hmm. we had this domestic partnership and it was now legal. So every time we would bump into somebody, because I didn't want to say that she was my girlfriend, because she wasn't my girlfriend, and partner feels weird. And I also, I'm also an entrepreneur. So I think people thought that I was also like saying that she was my business
right.
partner. Like, it just was like, and I was like, well, and I, so I introduced her as my wife, and then people were like, wait, did you guys have a wedding? And we're like, no. So it would always turn into this like clusterfuck conversation about like the law and like, because what's legal and what's not legal. Mm-hmm. And so many of my like heteronormative friends would just be like, wait a second, it hasn't been legal this whole time. And I'm all like, no.
Where have you been,
like,
living under a rock?
Yeah. Oh my God. And then like, I just had to, you know, take my righteous, whatever, blah, 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 that I wanted to fill up. Like, it was always really, really challenging. So then we actually had, a wedding after, I didn't get cold feet at all. I'm super stoked to marry my wife, but just the ins and outs of like family being like, oh, we kind of can't make it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and you're like, but why? Like, why? And you're kind of, you know, and I don't want to assume that it's because they're completely fucking homophobic, but I see them doing other things where I'm all like, oh, well, you seem to have the money and the time for that. I'm so
mm-hmm.
confused. So it really challenged me. And then my wife, we even had a vision board. I mean, we did all that shit. We had like, cakes and dresses and shoes and things all pinned on a board. And I got so frustrated with it that I burned the vision board.
God.
And like, I was like, fuck this shit, the vision board. And I burned it. And she was like, oh my God, I'm losing her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she planned a secret wedding.
Oh.
She planned a surprise wedding for me.
Wow.
And I know. And she picked out my shoes. She picked out my dress. She got, you know, she picked out the cake. And literally, she did the whole fucking thing. And she told my family and people who wanted to come and blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's like a 50-50 shot, because you could be either like, oh my God, that's so sweet, I love you. Or why the hell did you think it was okay to do this without me?
Yes, I know. You know what? You're right. She totally took a gamble, because I would have been like, bitch, I want to do all that shit. But I was so stoked because I was so overwhelmed by the
mm-hmm.
process. I just had so many expectations about what I thought my family should have done for me, or what I thought my friends should have done. And it was just too new. It was too, I don't know what it was. I don't know why I got so jacked up about it. And, but you know what? Here's the thing. We had a fantastic wedding, and finally she had to break down and tell me, because I had a short film that got into Outfest, and
oh, wow.
it was screening on July 14th. And she was like, no, it was screening on July 12th. And she said, and I was making all these plans for July 13th because I got into the festival. It was a really big deal. And so I was all like, we're going to go to this movie and that movie, and we're going to have lunch with this person. And I was like networking and doing all the, you know, my working my magic. And she was all like, you're not doing anything July 13th. And I was like, why? And she was like, because we're getting married and everybody's involved and you're the last to know. And I was like, ah. So it was kind of like one of the most magical weekends. Like, I got to marry the love of my life, and I had like some career success, like everything that I love. You
That's
know what
awesome.
I mean? Like, just the triad of awesomeness. And so it was pretty fucking bitchin'. It was pretty great.
That's awesome. I love how you take everything that could have put you down. You took a situation that, you know, family might not be supportive, and you just kind of turned it upside down, and you're just kind of like, well, if you don't like it, I don't give a shit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing too about being a stand-up comic, which is that it gives me plenty of material. And that's the thing about, like, I always joke about it from stage. I'm all like, if you're friends with a comic, you better fucking watch it. We're going to talk about your ass.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So watch it, because you're next, man. Like, you're next.
Everything
in the
is
line,
material.
Fodder.
Yeah.
Oh my God, completely. So, you know, here it is. And so, you know, and it's funny because I did a whole bit about wanting to know who's homophobic in your life. And I was like, if you want to know, if you just want to know, it, you could be gay, straight. It doesn't even fucking matter. If you just really want to know who's homophobic in your life, create a Facebook event for your gay wedding and invite all of your fucking friends and family. And you will immediately find out who's fucking homophobic and who isn't, because the people who aren't homophobic will be like, oh my God, I'm so fucking stoked. Even if they're surprised, it'll just be like, well, that's okay. It's new, but okay. I'm totally in. When do we go? When do, you know, can I bring a casserole? Can I, you know, can I, when can we go pick out your dress? Like, they'll be totally on board. And the people that are homophobic, they will make other plans. They will just not fucking respond. It's so funny because when I do that joke, it's almost like it sucks the air out of the room. And here's the thing I think about comedy too, which is that sometimes I love to point out how shit's not funny. I'm all like, see how not fucking funny that was? And then sometimes if I'm with an audience that fucking laughs really, really hard at the part about people not coming to your wedding, I'm all like, I see where you guys are at.
Right.
It's a pretty fucking interesting barometer, you know, when you get to see like where people laugh and where they don't laugh.
Yeah,
you know, like,
absolutely.
What is funny and what isn't funny. And you know what? It really is different with every audience. I mean, where they're at, you know, whether or not they've gotten their drinks yet. Like, I mean, sometimes it can be so fragile. And then sometimes it's just on fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I actually kind of like it sometimes. I kind of like not getting the laugh, to just be like, wong, and then be able to be like, bring it all back around later on.
Well, I imagine that's got to be, you know, that's the skill to hone, is you probably go into each night with, this is kind of the material I want to cover. And then you get in and the audience doesn't respond, and you have to kind of really quickly think on your feet and change gears and see what it is they respond to and build off of that.
It is so... And here's the thing about that too, which is that, like, you know, I'm such a creature of validation, and I feel like that we've gotten 1,000 times worse. Like, oh my God, that post only got 45 likes.
Oh, absolutely.
Or, you know, we're watching these numbers to see the validation. We're watching for it. So what's interesting is that, like, even when I'm on stage for just a short period of time, like 5 to 7 minutes, like, I go through, like, this incredible, like, roller coaster of, like, they're not liking it, they're not liking it, they're loving it, they're loving it, they're not liking it, they're like, you know, and it's I'm really, really trying to, like, hone the skills of just being, like, this is just what I have to say, which is why I'm not kind of, like, a set up, punchline comic. I can do it. What happens is that if I'm able to do it, I can usually work that material for a short period of time,
right?
Like set up, punchline, but then it gets really stale for me, and then it doesn't hit. And what I found really works for me is I have to tell stories. So I tell stories about my life, I tell stories about where I'm at and what's going on, you know, relevant stuff. Like, just last night I was at an artist's it was called BBQ LA. I was at this artist barbecue, and there was performance art, and these guys were essentially like putting body parts into a fan blade. And at one point, the guy put his, like, dick in the fan, and it was just like, I have to talk about that tonight. You know what I mean? Like,
how can you not?
It's a new version of dick in a box. You know what I mean? So, okay. And that, when it's fresh for me, and I'm searching and trying to find it, it's also fresh for the audience.
Yeah.
So I have to either, like, work more on the setup, punchline thing, like, to kind of keep it so that I have stuff in my reservoir. But for me, I'm usually about the story. I'm really about kind of, like, just, you know, talking about what's going on.
Yeah. I think that's easy for people to connect with.
Yeah. So do you want to do a bit of your comedy routine for us?
I'm trying to think what else I could talk about.
Is there anything topical right now that you're
in the news or in the headlines that you're...
Oh my God. I mean, here's the thing about being in comedy while the whole fucking world is fucking falling apart. Yeah. I mean, we've got people dying and, you know, bombs going off and I mean, just travesty. And then you're like, hey, come to my comedy show.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you feel like the biggest bag of douche just to be like, hey, don't worry about that.
No, but
come to my comedy show.
It is an escape from that reality of the real world. And it kind of puts to light some of the events in the world that aren't quite so glamorous.
You know what? And here's the thing, which is that terrorism, you know, to be terrorized, if you are terrorized, then it's working. Mm-hmm. They have won.
Absolutely.
Like, seriously. Like, that's where they're at. That's what they want. They want you to be afraid. They want you to question your beliefs, because if you have your beliefs and they have their beliefs, but their beliefs are fucking scary and you're afraid to believe in your thing, well, then maybe you'll do their thing. Like, they're just trying to get control. And it's like, and just like what you were saying earlier, it's like, in the face of what is scary, in the face of what is painful, you know, still maintaining your voice and doing mm-hmm. what you want to do. Because if you're not doing that, well, then who are you? Like,
right.
then yep. you're just a shell moving through the molecules of space and time, you know? So, it's going to be pretty interesting tonight, performing, just because I certainly know too that the audience is going to bring that into the room. And mm-hmm. what I've also seen is that people then try and talk about it. Maybe it's too soon. Maybe the way that they've talked about it is tacky or gauche or, you know, not cool or what have you. And so we'll see a lot of it tonight. And, it's really all just like a learning process.
Right.
You know, even like Russell Brand was talking about how he talked about 9/11 literally like the day after, and he got fucking canceled. Like, they were just like, nope. You know what I mean? It's like untouchable. Like, you can't do it. You know, so we'll see how it goes. You know,
I mean, if all else fails, you always have the presidential debates to fall back on. So,
yeah, there's plenty of material there.
Oh my God.
Which is a comedy show in itself.
Right. A Republican debate is a comedy show.
I mean, it is so bad. I mean, I watched the, Republican debate, and but I watched it. Have you guys seen the lip syncing version of it? Where oh my God, they're all singing their songs. I mean, essentially, that's what it is when I watch them. I do not understand the words that are coming out of their mouths. I'm like, how can someone think like that? And I'm just really excited for, you know, that generation to die off, because I feel like the younger, hipper.
That's not where I thought you were going to go with that sentence. That's awesome.
Like, I'm just waiting. Like, I'm just like, please go. You know what I mean? Like, because your antiquated idea about how shit's supposed to work is not the jam.
Yeah.
Like, you're the minority now. Like, you gotta get in line. Like, this is not, I mean, that's why I'm like Bernie Sanders all the way. Like, the guy just speaks my language. I'm totally down. I feel the burn constantly. Like, I love that dude. I'm like, he's flying coach. He's trick or treating with his kids. Like, that's a fucking real guy, man. That's a guy that fucking cares. You know what I mean? I won't be completely pissed if fucking Hillary wins, but I certainly am not down with a Donald Trump situation.
Oh, no,
I'm all like,
not.
The guy has even said that he fucking is like, you know, they brought out this like 1980s Time article where he even said he was like, the Republicans, I'd win in 2 seconds. They're such idiots. You know what I mean? Like, he said it. It's a joke. It's like comedy. No wonder he was on SNL. It's a joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's very entertaining for us. But there is a little bit of realism in it that you laugh and then you're kind of like, but so well, people actually support this.
You bring it back to kind of the LGBT community. I think we all like to think that younger generation's coming up and times are changing. But then you still have a Congress that has a Republican majority that's stymieing the passage of LGBT rights bills.
Who won't leave.
It just won't go.
But here's the thing, too. I really feel like it's just a matter of time, because I have heard of younger Republicans that don't give a shit who you're sleeping with.
Yeah.
Right.
They don't fucking care. And you know what? Here's the thing. I understand people have different point of views, and I need to have just as much compassion and flexibility, my open-mindedness, as they do. Right.
Absolutely.
So I'm all like, okay, here's the thing. I actually have Republicans in my life who are fucking awesome. My child's grandparents are, I swear to God, like, I love these people. They are generous and kind and loving, and they had a Romney sticker on their Lexus. You know what I mean? Like, driving up to my house with my new girlfriend and my blue hair and, like, you know what I mean? Like, hey guys, what's going on? You know what I mean? And I feel like I'm a representative of everything that, and I'm not sure if they don't like it, but they don't act like they do.
Right.
So I'm very, you know, I'm confused about it. They could completely, here's the thing. I'm not, you know, I had a baby with a man, and they could completely, I'm not even related to them. Like, they could completely never speak to me again. And here's the thing. They called me before they called my baby daddy. Like, we are so tight, and aww, they're Republicans. I know, it's super sweet. And so it's funny, because I was with my kid one day, and he was like, and we were talking about Obama, and he was like, who would vote for a Republican? Like, who would do that? I go, your grandparents. That's who. Those really lovely people. They're in our lives. You know what I mean? So I've got to have acceptance, and they've got to have acceptance, even though it is staggeringly shocking when I look at like the Republican, you know, debate, and people are applauding, like, you know, just more guns. You know, let's just cut everybody out of, you know, any sort of help that they would ever need.
Right.
Let's just, you know, get rich, and I don't care how I do it. And it's like,
well, you know, for our community right now, the biggest thing, and this is the, you know, Ben Carson and Huckabee and the Houston Hero Ordinance has turned around on us, you know, oh, you let trans people use any restroom and your children are going to be molested and all of this nonsense.
Yeah.
Like,
there was a great sketch last night on SNL that they had about a trans person using the restroom. And it was Pete Davidson, who I think is adorable and a great upbringing.
Yeah.
And he was saying, yeah, I'm going to change my gender. I'm going to take all these drugs and I'm going to go into a bathroom where the paper on the floor could be a person, and I'm going to do all this just so I could watch a woman pee, you know? And it was,
right, how absurd.
Yeah.
It was a great representation of how ridiculous
right
this is.
And see, here's the thing about that. I really feel like the fear is just about ignorance.
Yep. Yeah.
They're dumb. Anyone that's got that idea about, I have so many trans friends. I have trans clients. I have, like, I look at these people, and if I, and there's been times where I'm with, like, my super straight friends, and I'm all like, you know, that person was born a woman, right? Every once in a while. I don't mean to, like, out them, and they're mm-hmm. very open about it, so I don't feel like I'm outing anybody, but I'm like, they were born a woman, right? Like, this, you would never know
right.
that this person was ever a woman, right? And they're all like, no. And I'm like, why would you make that person? It's a man. It's a man. Like, why would you even try?
Right.
It's like, I don't understand, like, why people can't get their head around it, and why they are thinking that somehow some sort of, like, why the fear has to come in.
Yeah.
I'm completely confused about it again. And I feel like that's why anyone who talks in a presidential debate about education, I'm all like, we need more education, bitches, mm-hmm. because this is, we are raising some dumb, dumb, dumb people. Like, if you look at where we're at in the United States, like, on this, like, all the other countries with where we're at with, you know, testing scores, like, we're big at the bottom. Like, we're
right.
just a joke. We're just like a big, dumb lug. And if you go to the cities, you know what I mean? Like, New York, LA, Chicago, you know, whatever it is, like if you're in those bigger cities or if you're in kind of like a little pool in your area that's LGBT positive and it's cool, but you know, we need more education.
Yeah.
We just need more exposure, more people on TV, more people speaking their mind. And I feel like
too, because of the internet,
because of things like your show where you're just all like, nobody's stopping me. I'm going to plug in my computer and I'm going to talk the way I want to talk. And that, to me, is how people are getting educated.
Yeah.
It's not happening in our schools. They're learning from themselves. So they're learning from TV shows. They're learning from, you know, YouTube channels. They're learning from, you know, social media about this consciousness. And I feel like the younger generation, like you guys are probably a part of that. Like I'm 43, like so I'm on the older side of things, but it's like, I just feel like it's like my kid doesn't even question like that most of my friends are gay or that someone is trans. Like he's like, well, why? Oh, okay, great. And moveon.org. Like he doesn't even fucking question it. You
know? That's the same with Sarah, firstborn.
Right. He's five now. And yeah, he just, oh, I like daddy's hair. No big deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're talking about the kind of that struggle to understand where the fear comes from. A lot of my friends don't like it when I make this correlation, maybe because it's true, but probably because they don't want to, I don't know, cloud the issue or combine them. But this fear that comes from that far extreme kind of religious Republican right, in the exact same words, in the exact same tone that people used to say, I don't want that black person in the restroom. You know, we saw this in segregated America where we didn't want blacks in our... It's the exact same fears. It comes from the exact same place.
It's like textbook. It is like word for fucking word. Yeah. And here's the thing too. It's like, you know, my wife and I, when the whole thing was going down, you know, it was like, are you going to be on the wrong side of history? Like, are you going to be the person that's like not letting the little black girl go to school?
Yeah.
Right. You're going to look like a real asshole in 25 years when we're all going to be like, remember when we wanted to separate people because of the color of their skin? It's like so ridiculous. That's why I feel like it's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
I really do. I feel like the older generation really just has to go. They really just have to like die off like a bunch of dinosaurs because they are keeping up this kind of crazy thing. And like I said, I have heard Republicans. There's even gay Republicans. Like it is possible. There's gay black Republicans. I promise you.
Yep.
Like they exist. And you know what? They just have a different way of dealing with their money.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't even necessarily think that, you know, older Republicans, like, I feel like it's all twisted with religion. And I feel like these were kind of old buttons that people could press that, like, God's going to be mad at you or you're not a good enough Christian or whatever. I feel like these buttons are being diffused because religion, I feel like, I mean, even saying this after the terrible things that happened in Paris, I'm just saying, like, in America,
right?
Like, the religion is different now. I feel like spirituality has moved in.
A Pew Research poll just came out that said Americans are becoming less and less religious and more agnostic or spiritual. So there's data to back up that feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's, I mean, I was raised technically Catholic. I mean, I'm Italian. And I was then, my stepmom is Jewish and I lived with her for many, many years. She's been my stepmom since I was three. I have my closest family is Jewish. And so, but, you know, I really identify with Judaism. There was, there's been a couple of times where I'm like, maybe I should convert. Maybe I just want like a bar mitzvah or something. Like maybe I just want to have a party. But, you know, but, and also too, I'm also sober a long time, which is, you know, a really big part of, you know, 12-step recovery is to find a higher power.
Right.
And so I kind of had to make my own, you know what I mean? And I feel like, for me, the antiquated version of like a higher power or a god is essentially like Santa Claus. Like I'm all like, I just want some shit. And if I'm really, really good, I'm going to get my shit. And I feel like if I give you this like list of shit I want, and I feel like that's also too like this kind of like this like heavy handed religious rule, which is that like if you're bad, you're not going to get your shit or we're not going to treat you right or you're cursed somehow. And I just think that if we understood God then we would be God. So I have a God of my not understanding. Like, I have a God that I don't fucking understand. I don't understand why people, you know, babies get cancer, or why there's rape, or why people want to blow up other people. I don't fucking get it. I do not understand it.
Absolutely.
And I cannot try and figure it out. Like, if I'm trying to figure it out, then I'm on the wrong side of the street. Like, I got to keep the focus on myself and how I'm bringing peace into my own family, into my own community, and what I can do one person at a time. And sometimes when I'm talking to people and I'm in like a public situation and I'm very social and I'm out a lot, and it's hard for me sometimes to keep my attention on that person. Sometimes if they're not as interesting as I want them to be, those are my judgments. And then I say to myself, what if I'm talking to a God? What if I'm talking to, this is someone's God? So I think about every single person that I'm talking to as if they are a God in their own world. They are a God in their own community. And it really helps me to be like, wow, like someone looks at this person and worships them, whether it's a partner or a dog or a lover or a friend, you know what I mean? And so I can give that person the same respect as opposed to just being like, oh, you're not cool enough for me. Move it along. Or you don't fucking agree with me. Move it along. You know what I mean? Like, it really helps me to tap into that.
That's
it's difficult.
That's a really good point, because I think that we find, or at least I know I do, I find it difficult to associate myself and talk with people who don't share the same beliefs as I do, because I get so frustrated with them for not being as accepting and as open. And so I think that that's a really good point that you made, that we're being just as bad by blocking them off as if the tables were turned.
Well, and I feel what's also difficult too is that, like, especially in the, and I've seen this a lot in the gay community, which is that we kind of eat our own, you know what I mean? Where it's like, I came out when I was 26 years old. I came out late. I was like the last to know. And, and I had a series of, I had amazing relationships, and I also had, a crazy, very tragic, I fell in love with a New York City police officer, and it's a very long story, but she shot me. And I know it was terrible. And I can never just drop that one. Everyone's like, wait, what?
Right?
And and it really, and then I had another girlfriend after that. And I just was in this real mire of being in very dangerous relationships.
Right.
People with drug and alcohol problems, people with, you know, mommy, daddy issues, whatever it was, whether identity issues, like they were just really challenged and dangerous. I mean, technically dangerous, you know. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just need to be open to love. Maybe maybe it's not a boy or a girl or whatever. Maybe I just need to. And I was like, maybe that's the answer. And so I opened it back up to men, and I was with a man and got pregnant, and had a baby. And during that time, I really felt like, oh, my gay brothers and sisters, you know, are mad at me. I seriously thought that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think they want to hear from me. I think they think I jumped the fence or what have you. You know what I mean? Like, and so I really felt like I wasn't, and I was like, but aren't we all just fighting for love?
Right.
That, you know, aren't we all just fighting that, boy, you should really just fucking be with somebody that really fucking makes you feel fucking awesome.
That's
and whether
amazing,
that's a man or a woman, or a woman who becomes a man, or a man who becomes a woman, or like whatever it is, like, you need to find whatever that is. And maybe that was just my judgment. Maybe nobody was thinking that, but that's how I felt. And I really feel like too, that we can, as a community, pass judgment on other people in the way that they're doing it. They're doing it wrong. They're not, you know, whatever it is, like, you know,
it's interesting that you see that, because it makes me feel like I'm not the only lone idiot out there feeling it. We actually started a project called Unite the Rainbow, and it's unitetherainbow.org. We're working on some art designs that we're, you know, selling t-shirts and that sort of thing. And then some of the profits to that will go towards different organizations that have this similar vision. And it is exactly that, you know, that we are stronger united. And all of this infighting that we do, there's a petition on change.org right now that a group of gay, lesbian, kind of on the far end have said, you know, The Advocate and all of these other publications, but we need to drop the T, because LGB is about who you love and the T is about who you are. And so we're not the same, but we are, like, you know, so those, it's those, it, in the same way that I connect with
Black people and their struggles.
Right.
It's a struggle for rights. It's a struggle to just be who you are.
Right.
In this country. And so we have to go back and remember that there is a one strand that connects all of us, and that's that we're human. And so that's kind of what the project is all about. But it's I love that you felt.
I think it's awesome. I mean, I was at you guys obviously know the show Transparent.
Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. Yep. Yeah.
And going through Outfest with my film, I went to Jill Soloway. They had a Transparent panel at Outfest, and they had Jill and the entire cast, you know, Zachary Drucker, Reese Ernst, and, you know, the entire cast. And, you know, Zachary, do you guys know about Zachary Drucker and Reese Ernst? Do you guys know them?
No.
They are, you should look them up. They're stunning and gorgeous and one more hot than the next. And they're both trans. And they are the trans kind of like, they're consultants, essentially, on the show to say, like, so that Jill, because, you know, Jill was like, I have to tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
So now just a little backstory. So anyway, so during the panel, it was a love fest. Everybody was just like, I fucking love the show, man. This is groundbreaking. God bless you. This is amazing. Look at all of you. This is so amazing. Jeffrey Tambor and blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, it was just literally an hour and 15 minutes of a love fest. And the last woman who fucking stands up is essentially like, shame on you. And you're just doing this, like, essentially what she accused Jill of was blackface. She was like, what you're doing is blackface. You've put a man in a dress.
Right. You didn't hire a trans actor to play it. Yeah.
Right. But I was all like, but here's the thing. It's not about a trans person.
It's about telling the story.
It's about someone transitioning.
Right.
And so, yes, at some point, it is going to be a man in a dress because, yeah, that's what that person was doing in the story. That person is telling a story. And what I think is very challenging is that when you get one movie a year, I mean, I really feel like our community gets one movie every 5 years that just has to completely represent our entire community. It is not possible. It is not possible that we are all going to be represented. We're not, it's not possible.
Right.
So you know what? More conversation. Great. You know, Transparent might not be your story, lady in the audience that's fucking pissed off about it. But here's the thing. Having that show on the air is so that people can fucking start having open conversations about this over the water cooler at work with their kids, with friends, with neighbors. Like, hey, did you see that show? Like, and so people can start fucking talking about it. And you know what? It starts with a conversation. And here's the thing too, which is that at that point, Jill had not come forward that this is the story of her father.
Right.
So she could not defend herself.
Wow.
And I knew she could. So now I have friends that were friends with Jill. So I knew this backstory, and Jill was sitting up there weeping because she could not say, this is my fucking story, lady.
Right.
Yeah.
This is my story.
Right.
This is my story, not your story. So here's the thing, angry lady in the audience. You want to be represented? Get a camera. Get a fucking editing software.
Yep.
Get your fucking computer out. Get a fucking social media platform, and you fucking promote your shit. You tell your story. Nobody is stopping you, but how dare you step into somebody else's life and say, you can't tell your story because you're not telling it right. And I'm holding my fingers up doing the bunny ears.
Yep.
Like, there is no right or wrong. It's that's that person's experience, and that's the story that they're telling. And you know what? We can't be represented every fucking 5 minutes in every single in every single web series and commercial and TV show. It's not possible.
No,
today,
and each one that's come out has been attacked by some subgroup. The other one is that's coming out, Tomboy, where the character
I don't know it.
The character here is a hitman that was forced into a gender transition by a character played by
Sigourney really?
Sigourney Weaver plays kind of like the evil doctor who forces this person into a transition. And I'm trying to find who the heck plays it. Oh, Michelle Rodriguez. Plays.
Oh yeah, I heard about
Oh my god.
So the trans community, of course, is coming out and saying, well, you know, how dare you blaspheme the struggles that we go through by using this as a plot device? Like, come on, go watch the damn movie and laugh. Like, have a good time.
You know, and I really agree with your point of view about it. Like, it's a story.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I mean, it's not so precious. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's fragile. It's important. But like, you know what? I mean, why not?
Right.
I just really feel like more conversation. And here's the thing. Zachary and, you know, and Reese sat up there as consultants, and they were all like, just so you know, we are both trans, and so many people behind the camera, and I have clients and things like that who've been on the show, who've been featured on the show. It's like, they are totally like, we will include as many trans people as possible to be a part of this process, just because this was made by a white cis woman, but this is also her story with the trans community. And I feel like she's actually telling the story brilliantly, you know.
Absolutely.
And then the woman kind of fought back, and the woman was like, well, you're on the payroll. Like, you have to say that. And I mean, it got fucking awful. Like, it really was like, really sucked the air out of the room. And Jill was just sitting up there with just tears streaming down her face for being, and I'm sure that it's like, and I just know that, you know, in all of our lives, it's like, we get so many great stuff that happens to us, but boy, that one person that says one fucking shitty thing, and I can't sleep for a week about it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it's so dangerous to not think about what you're saying. It's so dangerous to be like, well, what am I saying? Like, is what I'm saying right now going to bring peace to the situation? Or is what I'm saying going to fucking really, you know, derail some really important stuff that's happening?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're running out of time here, so we'll wrap it up. But absolutely appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh my goodness, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
You're a riot. We love you.
Oh my God, absolutely. Well, let me know, you know, when it goes up and what have you. And I'd love to hear it and support you guys more. You know, I have a company called Promotional Rescue, and I help people learn to promote themselves, and I support all kinds of people in their journeys, doing everything.
Yeah,
and,
that would be awesome.
So I'm all about it. So I would love to know more about what you guys are doing, and keep me posted. And
yeah, and I'll send
over my info.
Oh,
yes,
perfect.
Yes.
We'll attach a link also to your website. I listened to your comedy last night, and it was hilarious. Like, you're absolutely brilliant. So it's amazing. It's an honor to talk to you. It really
absolutely
is.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, it's totally kind. And whatever I can do to help you guys, and, you know, and keep on doing what you're doing, man. I mean, it's really like, just keep on doing what you're doing in the face of, like, is this working? Does this matter? Because it does.
Yeah.
It really, 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 really does. It really, like, more conversations. It's the only way to get the light into the darkness.
I totally agree.
All right. That was Melanie Vesey. Again, very much appreciate her joining us on the show today.
An amazing person, an amazing soul to have in this world. So thank you, Melanie. I definitely think that is needed, especially at a time like this.
There's just so much shit going on in the world that sometimes you just have to look away and laugh. So that's all the time we have for today. Sound off. Join us online, facebook.com/Sarah Talk Radio. Twitter is @Sarah Talk Radio. Of course, you can leave comments on our website at saratalk.com. And we'll, of course, have a link to Melanie's website on the show notes as well. So be sure to check that out. And we will see you next time. For myself, Sarah Austin.
And Mandy Imus.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Sarah Talk.